Yo, 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 everybody, what's going on? Welcome to episode 50 of Climbing the Ladder. I'm your host, Chan Man V. And joining me, as always, is Mr. Mountain Man over here, John Clark.
What's going on, Chan? Check out the beard. It's all gray.
Awesome, awesome. And we'd like to welcome our new guest, John's twin brother, Mr. Richard Lewis, editor-in-chief of Kadri.org, and a long-time esports veteran. What's up, Richard?
It's great. I didn't even realize how much of a twin I was, like, until, because I have this vision of, like, John from, like, way back in my head, and then, like, when we actually both got on the Skype call a day, I was like, is that my window, or no, wait, that's John. So it was like, it's kind of awkward, I guess.
Let's make sure we coordinate not wearing the same shirt.
We definitely need to do that.
Like. So 8-10 years ago, you guys both have more hair?
Yeah.
All right. Who has a picture? If anybody out there has a picture of these two guys with hair, like, I definitely want to see this.
Facebook, you can check it. You can check my Facebook. I'll find the link for it. It's embarrassing, but I'll find it. I had really cool hair.
I used to have hair as long as Slasher used to, dude.
Like, same hair.
Oh my god! Wow.
Yeah, for real. Like, okay. Awkward. Awkward.
In the '90s, when you used to listen to Nirvana and stuff.
Yeah. Exactly.
Like, what do you mean, you know, in the '90s? But seriously, Richard, it's a real pleasure having you join us on the show, and you're going to be a great addition to the show, and we're going to have some fun every week, buddy.
Well, let's hope I'm a great addition. Let's not oversell it. let's just see how it goes.
Of course you're going to be a great addition. I wouldn't add you if not, right?
I've been a long-standing fan, so hopefully it'll work out. I'm sure it will.
It's going to be awesome, awesome. And our guest this week... So a little backstory with our guest is I've been trying to get him on for a long time. Me and him can definitely attest to that. But it just worked out perfectly because, you know, Richard was, you know, joining our show, and I thought a pretty nice kind of show-warming gift to him would be like, you know, what guest you want to have on, you know, the first week. And he's like, you know what? I have this bromance with Jason Lake, man, and it'd be like awesome to have him on.
That is actually what I said. That's true, but
romance, absolutely. So I'm thrilled to be here. Thanks so much for having me, and congratulations on 50 episodes.
Oh, thanks,
that's
man.
That's a lot of work and a lot of weeks and a lot of guests. So congratulations.
Yeah, it's going to be exactly a year and a couple weeks. You know, I was talking to John, like 52 will be exactly a year. Kind of funny how that works out, 52 weeks. But so, yeah, it's pretty awesome. But pretty excited, and you know how shows go too with the executives and all. So it's
a lot more work than people realize. You know, everyone's like, oh, you know, they're just doing it from home on a webcam or whatever. The scheduling, the organization, then you got notes, you got background research and coordination, and then you get the video stuff. I mean, it's a lot more hassle than it looks like when you tune in each week. So, you know, major props
on 50. Your room and great. Get all the stuff that you don't want people to see in the background.
Yeah, I got to throw up all these posters in the back now.
Hiding bras. I'm hiding Barbie dolls.
Dude, GameStop gave me this awesome StarCraft 2 display, this giant StarCraft 2 display that I'm going to have to figure out how to incorporate into the background here. But no, to kind of continue the proper introduction to Jason. Jason is, for those of you who don't know, I don't know what few people out there don't know, but he's the founder, owner, CEO of Complexity Gaming, big esports team, obviously, and... you know, I've been a huge fan of yours for a long time, and you know, he's been in esports for, actually all three of these guys have been in esports for a long time. So I think some of the topics we'll go over today will kind of look back at that and just kind of compare it to what's going on nowadays. But all right, let's just jump right into topic number one, guys. So Blizzard WCS announcement details and everything. That's obviously the big news and talk this week. You know, there was announced.
What happened?
It was announced Tuesday night here. Actually, it was Wednesday, you know, in Korea. But so kind of why don't we kind of obviously there's a lot of details. I mean, just to sum it up, you know, Blizzard announced that you know, they're kind of upgrading WCS into this very large tournament league that's going to try to unify all the the major tournaments in StarCraft esports right now and create this single storyline. I think prize money is $1.6 million, and you know, obviously a lot more investment going into that. With you know, just I think the whole thing is broken down into three regions. I got the diagram, and everything to show us in a second here, but lots of details.
A diagram.
Yeah,
we're gonna need it.
Yeah, yeah. Wow. I mean, let me just show it to you now, guys. See, it's right here, okay? So we got this diagram of just kind of how the regions are breaking down. There's going to be three seasons in 2013 with a grand finals culminating at BlizzCon, I believe. And then 2014, I think we'll have four seasons, and same deal, kind of just a huge finals at the end of it. But, you know, lots of details we'll talk about it, but I kind of want to get your just high-level general thoughts on the whole thing, just to start with. Why don't we start with you, Jason?
You know, as an old-timer, I feel very comfortable hanging out with other old-timers. and John and I and all of us spoke briefly. My first reaction to this, being an old-timer and just kind of enjoying the study of history and enjoying the study of how things evolve. You know, when I was in law school, I studied a lot of sports law and how the NFL and Major League Baseball came about, and I found that very intriguing. I find this entire situation that we're currently finding ourselves in or enjoying, whatever, to be very interesting. Back in the old days, here's a super basic breakdown on some of the evolution of esports. There was a couple small leagues, generally started by compelling personalities like Angel Munoz, who started the CPL. He then sold the concept to sponsors who gave him a little bit of money to hold video game tournaments. Goes all the way back to, you know, Quake and Carmack and Ferraris, and it's a great story. You should look it up sometime. But it was basically, you know, a small group of people or even one person kind of being behind it. And then they would have to go to the companies that make the game, the game developers, and be like, hey, can we please use your game in our tournament? And it was kind of this, say, hey, will you come, you know, is it okay? And kind of, you know, the coin was completely on the other side back then. And then we've kind of evolved to where developers were participating in assisting leagues, like you saw them actually helping with the prize money. You even saw recently developers paying some tournament organizers just to get their game on the circuit. They considered it affordable advertising. And now we've kind of gone through that cycle during what I kind of call the Wild West of esports, where things are scattered all over. And for many years, everyone's been asking, who's going to organize this thing? Is it going to be the team union? Or is it, you know, are all the leagues going to be brought under one umbrella? You know, and the CGS tried to be like, look, we're going to take it over and organize it. And no one has obviously succeeded. So now we have the developers who are coming in and kind of calling the shots. You know, League of Legends has their thing. Activision is a $1 million event in LA this weekend. And now you've got Blizzard finally saying, look, this Wild West isn't helping anyone. This is a little confusing. There's content overload. We're going to step in, and if you want to use our game, you're going to, you know, play ball with us. And they've set up this system, which puts them in control. So now the game developers in a historical format have taken control, and they're basically saying, we're going to be the ones to organize this. Is this healthy? Is this sustainable? Will they disappear when their game kind of stops selling? I find these questions very interesting, and the entire situation, before we even dive into the nitty-gritty of it, interesting. I will say this, though, on its face, I think it's wonderful that developers are involved in esports. I think it's phenomenal. Mm-hmm. For many years, I was ripping my hair out, you know, as a business person, going, why would you not come in and, like, make a big deal out of this esports thing? And, you know, frankly, it is very affordable marketing when you compare it to other forms of marketing, and it grows grassroots user bases that tell all their friends about your game and goes viral even before viral was a thing back in the day. So I'm thrilled that Blizzard's doing it. My hat's off to them. As an esports fan and a StarCraft fan, I think it's overdue even. For me personally, as we talked about before the show started, I love StarCraft, but after 2 years of just non-stop tournaments and daily playhams, and it's just like I couldn't even turn on my computer without feeling like I got to turn on something because I'm missing something. It was just kind of disorganized, and I think for a lot of the fan base, it was disjointed and got to be a little overwhelming. So I think an understandable format run by Blizzard itself is a brilliant idea, and I'm super excited that they're doing it.
So, I mean, is that what we're getting towards? Just fewer, I mean, are you wanting fewer events? Is that what you're kind of saying with that statement at the end there?
I don't know that fewer events is necessarily the key. I think organization is the key, where casual people can come in and look like, what is this thing? Oh, okay, here's a global tournament circuit run by the people that make the game. That's easy to understand. I mean, once you get into the details, it's a little more convoluted, but you understand on its face, this is the NFL of StarCraft. Right. I get that. It's simple. When a casual fan would come into StarCraft before, it's like you got MLG, you got NASL, you got ESL, you got DreamHack, you got GOM, you got G, and then you got Pro League. It's just like, whoa, what in the hell is this? It's very overwhelming. And I don't think that's conducive to building larger fan bases and trying to expand what we're all working on here.
Right.
So, I mean, of course, there'll be issues, and of course, there's going to be, you know, people that aren't thrilled, but I'm personally happy that Blizzard's taking control of it for the time being, and good on them. That's my short answer.
Okay, short answer. John, what do you think, man?
I agree with a lot with what Jason said, and I think my worries, I have some genuine concerns. Not that I don't think that they can't be worked through, but my general concerns are that we'll get to a point where it becomes a very fragmented industry, where esports is not defined as people competing so much in electronic gaming. It's that they're competing in very specific games. So people, I mean, it's good that the developers are getting involved. It's very good that they're kind of competing against each other who can offer the better game, because that, of course, only helps us as players, as team managers and team owners, because we see the benefits of it. But, you know, I've said this for some time. As much as I've bagged on, you know, some things that MLG's done in the past, or maybe even ESL or the old school ones like GGL and ESWC, is that I believe that we need those. We just need them working together more. And they've talked about collaboration, and I'd like to see more of it, you know. When we had Sundance on the show, you know, he mentioned that they are working on things. It is going to take some time, but I'd much rather go to an event in which there's three or four different games going on than have to choose between the developers. That's just my thoughts on it.
Okay, great. Richard, what do you think?
Well, it's great that Jason's actually on to answer this, because I'm sure his involvement with the CGS, and he knows CGS were pretty pioneering in what they tried to do, even though it didn't quite work out the way they wanted it to. But I'm kind of on the fence on it, to be honest. I definitely agree with what Jason's saying, in that we want developers involved in the game. Brilliant. They control the IP. They control the direction of the game. If they're involved in esports, we get this two-way dialogue going on with the people who play it, the people that help you know, promote it. And I think that's a very good thing, because, you know, for example, if you look at what Valve have done with their titles, where they've just been completely removed from the esports community, each new kind of update of their games gets further and further away from what the pros and what the competitors want. Right. So their involvement within StarCraft, you know, fantastic, and them finally acknowledging, it's a shame it took till 2013, but, you know, fair play, they got there in the end. But I also think there's a definite risk when a developer comes in and says, okay, we're going to make this big shiny league with all the prize money, and now all the tournaments that exist outside of that, you're going to kind of have to dance to the beat of our drum. We'll give you ranking points for the events we approve of, but if you try and run an event on a conflicting weekend, or we just plain don't like you, or, you know, we don't think the way you run the event is conducive to our vision, they're going to get froze out, and suddenly we're going to get this kind of tiered you know, creation, where you're either WCS endorsed or you ain't. And that's not potentially a good thing. These monopolies rarely work out. And then, as John points out, what happens if one day Blizzard, you know, 5 years from now, is like, okay, well, that was fun, but we got a new game coming out, the new Warcraft's coming out, whatever. We're gonna transpose all of those resources across to support the newer title. And then when that happens, because the community's been killed off by this big towering behemoth that all seemed nice and shiny at the time, there's nothing to fall back on. There's nothing to go back to. It really removes esports from the hands of the community, and it puts it in the hands of businesses. And
I think what you just said is the key. And I've been doing a lot of brainstorming on this since, you know, the Blizzard's formal announcement. And I think that is very much the danger. We want developers involved, absolutely. But at what point is esports going to be set aside as an advertisement tool and not as a legitimate sporting activity? That's kind of why this entire phase in esports history, and I do call it a phase because I'm not convinced that this is how esports is going to mature and end up. This phase is very interesting for many of us who follow the history of esports because we're not sure exactly how it's going to work out. Like you guys both brought up, there are a lot of downsides to this model. We're thrilled to have their involvement. We're thrilled to have their support. We're thrilled to have their money. But at the end of the day, each game dev only gives a shit about their own game.
That's right.
Their own game. Let's face it. They don't seriously care about esports. They don't seriously care about any ecosystems outside their own game. I mean, it doesn't make them bad people. They work at a company, and their job is to make the company money. Okay, so they're viewing esports as a way to sell more copies of their games, to continue the lifespan of their games, to sell more expansions or whatever, sell more heroes or whatever it is. And that's fine. That's totally fine. I respect that. But those of us that actually love the concept of esports and building something for the next generation, when they look back and is like, hey, these guys are kind of pioneers. They built this thing that's synonymous as pro soccer or NFL or Major League Baseball from virtually nothing. We look at this, and there's definitely two sides to the coin.
Yeah, I mean, but we're always going to have that issue with you know esports because the IP is not. I mean, the IP is not public, right? I mean, until there's a game that's actually open source, then we won't have this issue, right? I mean, then there'll be more of a you know, it will mirror more like you know regular sports where there are big organizations that you know create their different leagues, and there's not just one overseeing thing. So we're going to have to deal with it for a long time. It's just I think it'll come to a point. I think the magic point for esports is when people watch it more than they play it. You know what I mean? Like whenever they don't care so much about the copies sold versus the money that they're making from advertising, right? And that sort of thing. Just the revenue that's generated there. So, you know, if they can get to that point, then I think, you know, I think we could still possibly be in a good, you know, good place even with Blizzard like just you know, having kind of a monopoly, like you're saying, Richard, but definitely those, I mean, I think that's the big danger. I think most people that kind of, you know, looking between the lines can kind of see. So it's kind of cool that you guys brought that up.
The underlying issue, I mean, not really an issue. I mean, the thing is this is good. It's not that this is a bad thing. It's not that the developers being involved are a bad thing. It's a good thing. I think we just need, I mean, we understand it's a growing pain. I mean, it's definitely something like you're saying, these things are going to happen. People are always going to be looking for an edge, whether it's the developer or the community or team managers or players themselves. They're always going to be looking for how they can get an edge. And this is just one way that developers are doing so. I just have some genuine concerns and we'll kind of wait and see how it plays out. I think in the end, it will work out, but we may go through a phase in which the developers are taking control and we're like, oh, now hold on just a moment. But I think we'll get to a point where it's kind of in between and it works out for everyone.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about it in the past where I think in an ideal situation, you know, we don't think developers and esports should be honestly intertwined, right? I mean, the developer running the esports, right? But, you know, I think we can all agree that you know, having an infusion of like a lot of investment, you know, and money into esports is definitely something that we do need in this current state of esports. So, you know, if it has to come from the developer at this point, then I think, you know, for me, it's actually that's kind of a necessary evil if it is an evil.
I definitely agree about the money point, but again, it's the trouble is like as Jason pointed out, it's not like a charitable donation. You know, when these companies put money into the game, into the scene, into the community, all of these wonderful terms that make it sound almost altruistic. The reality is they're expecting a return on it. And two things can happen. Either they don't get that return and it stops. And as we've seen in the past, that can decimate an entire competitive scene for years to come back from that because everyone thinks, well, this is it, we've arrived. People start having unrealistic expectations. People start planning on money that they haven't even earned yet, and you know, organizations collapse. I mean, it can be a real bad thing when a big developer or any source of income just suddenly decides to pull out because it doesn't see the return. And then the other thing that can happen is it sees the return, and it can, you know, put more in and more in and more in. But again, there's always going to be an end game. There's always going to be a point where more is too much, or the return doesn't warrant their involvement in it anymore, because what we're doing here is we're making business decisions.
Right.
So I'm just saying people need to be very careful that, you know, yeah, it looks great and we can all, you know, woo, Blizzard are here, everything's going to be okay, guys. But, you know, the reality is Blizzard are a big company, and as Jason said, companies like to make money. When profit becomes the kind of byword of any project, that means all the stuff that we care about as esports enthusiasts, that's going to be a secondary or tertiary concern to those guys. So I just think, you know, again, we need to take everything that happens with a grain of salt. If a company gives a one hand, it is invariably looking to take with the other. That's just the reality of it.
Yeah, Jason, you have some comments?
I tend to look at these things and try to look at them optimistically, even though I have a very cynical nature at heart. If I was Mike Morhaime or, you know, Dustin over at Riot, and I looked at the current esports landscape, and I really loved my game, and I really wanted to do it right and develop it properly, I probably would have done the same thing.
Yeah.
This has been kind of a rebuilding phase for esports, like Richard said, after the demise of CGS. And it's been the Wild West, and people fighting over scraps and one-upmanship, and, oh, I'm going to release my stats a day after you, because then, you know, it's just all this nonsense going on, and a lot of infighting and bickering. If I was them, I'd be like, you know what? We'll play with you guys, but we're going to be the schoolmaster, okay? We're not going to just come on and hope that you kids all get it together, because we've given you a couple years, and you haven't. So I think, as an optimist, this phase of esports will actually turn out to be a very positive thing, because the developers are essentially making the leagues and the teams and the organizations around the world play nice. They're being like, we're the ones that are really in control here. We're all going to play nice. We're all going to hold hands and sing kumbaya instead of throwing stones across the playground. And even if the developers step back someday, I think the precedent that will be established will be a good one for the growth of esports, because who better to step in and make everyone quote unquote play nice and work in a cooperative spirit rather than this constant bickering and infighting than the people that control the IPs. So as an optimist, I look at this as a chance for someone with the power to unify the sport a little bit. Even if it's separate games for now, they're coming in and they're forcing everyone to work together. And as an optimist, I hope and I think that's going to, you know, turn out to be good.
Yeah, I think I would agree. Yeah, definitely agree with that. All right, let's get into some of the details of you know, the announcement. And since we talked kind of high level and just kind of what we think of it, let's start from the standpoint of the tournament organizers. And again, let me switch over to the view so we can take a look. And so the you know, one of the biggest things announced were that there are three regions, right? NA, EU, and Korea. And for each of the regions, there's kind of this, I don't know, how would you call it? Just a representative, I guess, you know, just an organization that's going to be representing the majors, I guess, in those regional finals and that sort of thing within the regions. And for EU, it is ESL IEM, right? America, it's MLG. And for Korea, it's a partnership between between OGN and GOM. So what are your thoughts on, I guess, that, you know, that structure and just the organization's chosen there? John, you want to start?
Do people like regionalization, for starters? I'll start. Do people, you know, I don't know how I feel about that, like, at all. I think, in general, when you kind of, and look, don't get me wrong, maybe geographically is the only way to do it, but I know it just feels a bit isolationist, and I don't think it's very good for the kind of promotion of talent pools either, particularly like in terms of developing the game, because we all know where the talent is. And if you start segregating people in the professional leagues, and, you know, people don't get to kind of cross over and play until the very finals, you're going to create tiers of talent where the people that make it through are likely to be the same people that make it through again and again and again, because they're the people that are getting to play the better players from the better regions.
Well, this segment consistently. This segment is not so much about the players as much as just the tournament organizers. Now we'll get to the players, believe me. I definitely have some comments on that. But just, you know, choosing, I guess, only these partners to be, like, I guess, above other organizations. So for instance, let's just bring up EU, right? Like, So IEM being chosen. I think a lot of people were surprised that IEM was chosen over DreamHack, given that the DreamHack events, you know, went so well last year. You know, so talk to me about y'all's opinions on just that. You know, just
well, I'm not surprised by that at all, actually.
That there's I guess, you know, that there's some
ESL was chosen over DreamHack.
Because I'm not saying so much that, you know, if it was chosen. I'm just kind of asking just generally, like, do you think it's a good idea to choose, I guess, these kind of organizations to be above the others in regards to the WCS?
No, I don't think it's good. That's my fear. That's my concern, is that they, as we talked about before, they start picking and choosing, and then everyone else kind of gets left behind, and they're... It's not wrong to be second tier, because I believe in a tiered system, but this is not setting that up to be a tiered system. They're just basically picking and choosing event organizers, and how they did that, we're not quite sure, obviously, but they're picking and choosing event organizers to represent their brand, and everyone else is kind of left with what? With really no support.
Jason, what do you think?
I see his concern basically... his concern is based around the developers becoming kingmakers, basically, where they get to pick and choose what esports leagues are tier 1, tier 2, tier 3, and quite possibly what esports leagues live and die. I have very mixed feelings on the way it's set up, but I think it just was a matter of, practically speaking, they had to start somewhere type of thing. Mm-hmm. They could have been much more strict and said, look, these are the leagues, that's it, period. You are not allowed to play StarCraft anywhere but our league, right? Take it to the extreme. They even gave a happier middle ground to the DreamHacks or NASLs and other leagues, saying, we'll give you qualifier points, which draws our fans into your event. Is it perfect? No. I've been involved with the creation of a global type of league before, and there is no such thing as perfect. There comes a point when you just have to say, this is what it is. It's mm-hmm. not perfect. We're going to continue to try to improve it. Let's get this product out there. Maybe it's a beta phase. But I, you know, whether they went with this league or that league or whatever, everyone's going to have differing opinions. I think they're just doing their best, and they wanted to get something off the ground. So
yeah, I mean, it's just interesting because obviously Korea has two. Right, I mean, it's more of a partnership between the two, right? And the other two only have one, so it's just kind of like, I just wasn't sure why they decided on one with the others when, you know, Korea already set the precedent of having two. You know, obviously, those two organizations have different kind of segments within, you know, the Korean esports over there or StarCraft 2, but still, you know, I just wasn't sure why they decided on that.
Well, what do people think about the actual choice of ESL over DreamHack? Anyway, I mean.
Well, John, you said you weren't surprised.
No, I'm not surprised at all. I mean, here's what they did. Blizzard had to have reached out to both of them. They had to have. I would think so. I would hope so. And they're posting some tweets by Robert Olin in the chat, which are interesting, to say the least. But I'm sure that they reached out to both of them. Or as soon as ESL and DreamHack got wind of it, I would hope that they would have reached out to Blizzard right away and said, hey, we can facilitate this. We can run this. But because there's an online presence to this, there's an online element of it, ESL just makes a lot more sense. They have bigger numbers. They have a user base. They have a database of online users that can play. They have a bracket system, a league system, whatever it may be. So,
and the studio, too.
Yeah. It just made sense to me. Would DreamHack would have been a good choice as well? Of course. But I think logistically for what Blizzard wants to do, which, again, I think the overall what they're trying to do is really good. We'll just have to wait and see how it all works out. But I think ESL was a good choice.
Yeah, I was hoping Robert could pop in here for a second, but I think Robert is like really busy because his kids are sick. But yeah, I spoke with him a little bit, and he's got some interesting thoughts on it. I probably won't mention them here now, but yeah, that's definitely one of the things concerning that. With I think just, you know, just the choice, you know, DreamHack versus IEM, because whatever little bits that I heard beforehand is that I heard that DreamHack, I was under the impression DreamHack was going to be the, you know, the EU rep basically there, but then, you know, obviously not. So, Okay, so let's get into the players a little bit and like kind of like what this means for the players and just the whole, you know, regionalization of it all. And, you know, the biggest thing is that the players have to choose which region to play in. And once they choose, then they have to play in it for the duration of, you know, that year, you know, I guess that, you know, those three seasons. But I heard on 2013 that they can choose to switch after the first season. From a player. So I'm not sure if that's completely true or not, but that's what I've heard from a player. So, you know, what do you guys think of that? Just having to choose what region you want to play in and getting to choose what region you want to play in, whether, you know, you want to, you know, you're in Korea and you want to play in NA or vice versa. And you know, just
so
having
can you still live in Korea and choose to play in NA? Well, that's something fundamentally wrong with that. It's not really regionalizing anything if you can just choose.
Yeah, that's my biggest thing. It's like, I don't know, they shouldn't call it regionalization because it's really just server, you know, server allocation. I mean, just which server you choose more so than region.
Now, if you're a Korean living in the United States or in Europe, and that's what you choose to be your region because you live there, but your race, this is what I've talked about long ago, we need to get away from the whole race thing, but... And I'm talking human race issues, but if a Korean, let's say, you know, wants to live in the United States, in Texas, let's say, you know, otherwise known as maybe Violet,
or
Atlanta, or Polk, and that's what they choose as the region because regionally that's where they live, that should be their choice. It doesn't matter what their race is.
No, I mean...
Well, I'd have thought region should be done regionally.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe I'm old-fashioned, right? Maybe I missed a meeting, but yeah. But yeah. No, that's what I think. And when I was reading, an interview with Mike before I came onto the show as part of research. I was looking at what he said, and when he that is absolutely right. You can live anywhere and enter any other element, of the region of the league. Like it's ridiculous. I mean, there has to be some sort of if you're going to do it, and I'm not saying I would do it that way. I would try and divide it up by talent, I guess, if I was doing it in my head. But anyway, ignore what's happening in my head. Like just
divided by talent? What do you mean?
I try and seed it so each division had the same amount of people in it rather that were all...
Zoning it?
Yeah, kind of.
Oh, my goodness.
I try and do it like that. Why would I try and do it like that? Because you can't have one region that's going to have all the super fiends that are all great at the game and then another region that's going to be weak and then the top six from that region or whatever is going to play the top six from that region get battered, but because of the experience they gain from that, they're going to be a little bit better, so they're going to win their region over and over again.
What's the World Cup?
Futuristic monopoly is what you're doing, effectively. A talent monopoly.
It seems gosh. Oh, man. Okay.
I'm talking about the problems that are going to crop up 2-3 years down the road, right? Okay. But yeah, there has to be some strict policy, and I'm sure they'll introduce one. I'm sure you said it's a work in progress, this kind of revising. I'm sure the first thing that's going to come out of this is actually allowing anyone to enter any region they want, regardless of where they live. Who they are is absurd.
Yeah, who would have thought that?
I think it has a lot to do with logistics. I mean, you know, like it's one thing to have the WCS last year where it's like you're representing your country. You know, like obviously there it's a lot easier to prove that with citizenship and that sort of thing. But when you're talking about just region, I mean, how are they going to enforce that? I mean, you know, even making you live there for a year is that's not easy to like. It's not easy to do. You know, just with visas and everything, right? So I think from a logistics standpoint, it's kind of a nightmare just doing that versus countries.
I'm guessing here, but I think you hit the nail on the head. I think this is going to be for 2013. We're already 3 months into the year. I think they're like, well, what if a Korean player would much rather play in North America than Korea? But the rule is you have to be like a resident for 3 months or whatever to participate in that region. So somebody at a meeting probably said, well, why don't we just open it up this year? But the logical next step would be towards the end of this year, they're going to announce, look, in 2014, if you want to play in a certain region, you have to live there because they're going to continue to regionalize it. I'm totally speculating, but I think that would make sense because you guys are right. That it strips the entire region concept if you can just play from Seoul or Paris and play whatever hell region you want. Like you said, it comes down to servers then, and that doesn't really fulfill the logical thing that you've just gone ahead and built. So mm-hmm. my guess is it's just going to be for this year.
Yeah, and you know this whole regionalization, talking about regionalization, I actually think it's a great thing. But you know, again, like what they've implemented this season, I don't think is good just because it's only server. But I think regionalization in general is good, and that's why I was super excited about this news. You know, like before it came, you know, before the details, more of the details came out, because you know we need some regionalization here in NA, yes. in the US.
I want to jump in here. The regionalization concept is an interesting one. It can be debated ad nauseum. Some of the deep underlying roots are you got two camps for competitive anything, but particularly esports because of the internet revolution. You got one that says, look, the region is planet Earth. We've got the internet. I can play a kid on Quake who's living in Brazil or whatever. Yeah. Those boundaries are gone. They're artificial. We're all going to rise above that crap. This is the new internet generation. There should be no regions. Esport is a global sport. Great argument. The other side comes from a more traditional psychological point of view. Here's what they're saying. Like it or hate it, mankind is kind of have this innate us versus them mentality. Okay, when you're watching Americans play, for example, and then the American champion is going to go play the champion of the European theater or whatever, that is drama. It creates this us versus them in the sport that already kind of exists in people naturally, like it or hate it. And sports psychologists over the years have played on this us versus them mentality that goes way back in human psyche to create a more compelling product, basically. It's not as pretty, but that's kind of the ugly truth. What is regionalism if it's not the us versus them? Otherwise, you do what I said prior and just open up to the world. The whole concept of regionals, let's find out who's best amongst us, and then we'll go play them. And that is obviously the very basic way to explain it, but that's exactly what it boils down to.
That's what all the sports are built on. The regions just happen to be like cities, or they happen to be countries, right? Or they happen to be, you know, however you want to break it down. But yeah, us versus them is like the fundamental of like I think what sports is built on in a lot of ways right now. Maybe there's some exceptions, like I don't know, even golf and tennis. I mean, there's still a little bit of that. I think. I don't know. I just think that it's
Does it apply to StarCraft, though? I mean, like, I know people from America who they cheer on Koreans. Their favorite players are Koreans, Europeans as well. Everyone's got their own favorite. It's like it's such an individual and personalized sport. Like, does nationality really come into it all that much?
It does.
We'll call foreigners their own country.
Yeah, I mean, like, again, that's just something
that's it's gotten to that point.
We perpetuate.
But, well, it's gotten to that point. Let's talk about that. I mean, right now it's like foreigners is such a wide thing because it's just so few. There's just not very many of them represented in a lot of these big tournaments, right? And we've had to kind of take an aggregate of foreigners versus just like Americans or Canadians or Germans and that sort of thing. it's the truth. It's just a pure numbers thing. And you're crazy if you don't think that you know some Americans would not cheer for an American like contender much harder than a Korean, even Flash.
I think people do it based on personality, or they do it based on who's the underdog more than what country they're from. You know, and obviously you can argue that if you're not from Korea, you're automatically an underdog, right? I get that, but eventually one day that's going to change, yeah? Okay? So what I'm saying is I think people, I know, like, I cheer on great players. That's how I look at it, and I don't really care if they happen to be Korean, European, or American. I'd like to think I'm maybe representative, but maybe I'm not. Maybe I'm being ignorant. Maybe there are like this hardcore, like nationalistic fans who are like, it doesn't matter who it is. It could be my favorite Korean player of all time. Mm-hmm. If he's playing someone who's got the same flag as me, I'm going for that dude every time. Like, maybe.
Yeah, and I tend to side with you. I prefer the global thing where maybe my favorite Counter-Strike team is Brazilian. Maybe my favorite StarCraft player is Korean. Maybe my favorite Quake player is from the Ukraine. I mean, that's how I follow esports. That's how I think it should be. But
or by team. You know,
oh, yeah.
Yeah, I follow Complexity players over. I want to see him just absolutely hammer EG players every time, right?
Because I guess
it's not true. I'm just using it as an example, and so it doesn't matter their race, which is why I've said before this whole race thing has gotten out of control.
No, it's
personality in a sense.
I mean, you know, part of my obviously opinion that I'm talking about right now for me is. I mean, it's a little bit construed because I'm thinking over the standpoint of just growth for esports, too. So, you know, I love watching the Koreans play StarCraft, too. I mean, I love watching the highest level of StarCraft, too. So I'm like one of those hardcores that you know, doesn't really see it that way, too. But I cheer hard for the foreigners because, you know, it might be a little bit to do with the underdog thing, Richard. But for me, it's just about growing esports. And, like, you know, there's so much potential in, you know, here. In NA, I mean, that we haven't even tapped into. I mean, I'm talking about just like tripling, quadrupling, 5xing, 10xing the industry now that we haven't even gotten, we haven't even touched at all. You know what I mean? And it's sad because I think that I have to like point to like things like this, like regionalization, as a way to grow that. You know what I mean? Because that's, you know, you talked about one day, Richard, that's going to get to that. Well, what day is that going to be if we don't help it out?
Yeah, okay, but I mean, I'm just saying, like, right? How we coax it along and how we help it, we got to think about that because, look, everyone in esports is trying to copy the mainstream sports model, yeah? But any mainstream sports fan knows there's a lot in mainstream sports that actually sucks that we would want to totally get rid of if you could rebuild sports from the ground up tomorrow. There's a lot, and I think part of it is that jingoistic, nationalistic, you know, the flag conquers all, it doesn't matter about anything else kind of attitude that you get in, you know, I'll say soccer because there's an American audience watching soccer audiences, you know.
There's a lot of EUers watching, dude.
Okay, soccer, football, whatever. But, you know, like, and I wouldn't want that to necessarily creep into esports. I've already seen it. I've seen it from a Counter-Strike background. Where, you know, people in Eastern Europe, in the Ukraine, in Poland, places like that, get very patriotic about their team's fortunes. And it's not always a pleasant thing. And it leads to a lot of obfuscation of the facts and people, you know, they're not being very fair. And another thing I think that might be worth mentioning at this juncture was, what was the incident recently where, like, Flash got booed and everyone was saying what a disgrace
MLG.
It was?
MLG.
Now... If right, so if we start pushing this regional kind of ideal, and as Jason exactly, you know, surmises, you know, the them and us culture, the them and us concept, aren't we going to see more scenes like that? And you know, I know that's a divisive issue in itself. Do we want more scenes like that,
John? Do we want more scenes like that?
Do we want more regional scenes?
Do we want more, like, you know, people getting booed?
Yes.
That's right. I knew he was going to say that.
Fan is short for fanatic. And we need more fanatics, especially in StarCraft 2. For crying out loud, if StarCraft 2 players should be fans and players and people that know esports only based on StarCraft 2, should spend about 20 minutes watching Counter-Strike videos of teams.
You sure they want you to watch that?
No.
They should. That's. I mean, we need more of that, and we do need more, you know, people rooting for players because of the team they're on, because of the region that they're in. You know, if I put together a Nebraska team for the CSL, right, and I, you know, maybe some of the players that I like also play for the Texas team, but I'm going to root for my Nebraska team to win it. Because I feel something for that, you know, especially, and somebody keeps mentioning this in the chat, and I'm not quite sure exactly who it is, but it brings up a good point, that especially for amateur, casual, or new viewers to a game, they need something more to attach themselves to because they may not have a high level of understanding of the game itself to be able to say, well, a match between Flash and so on, you know, and so-and-so is like an amazing match. For them, that doesn't correlate for them. They don't understand that part. But they do understand that their buddy down the street is playing in a match versus whoever, because they don't care who the other person is, and they want to root for that person because they have more of a connection to that person, and they understand the game better from that aspect as opposed to whether they understand, you know, the ins and outs of the actual game itself. Because, again, and people know this have watched the show before, I watch a lot of StarCraft. I still don't have enough time to even understand, to have a clue of what's really going on. But because of my involvement in the whole Violet thing in the past with CSN, I rooted for him every time, and I followed Team Liquid, Liquipedia. Right. Every time that he was playing, I wanted to know how he was doing because I had a personal connection to him.
Right.
And I wanted to see him do well. And if someone said, oh, man, if you liked that match between Violet and the Muslim, you should check out the match between, you know, Axelov and Dezra. I'm like, yeah, if I check that out, I'm not really going to have a clue because I don't really understand the game enough to know whether or not that's a great match compared to what Violet just played in. But I certainly do respect Violet and follow him and want to know how he's doing.
All right, well, I think that's, I think, what, 40 minutes on a topic's pretty good. So, and since we have Jason on here, we should definitely get to talking about some complexity news and what you guys are up to. So let's transition over to, just kind of what you guys are working on. And, you know, I was glancing at the, you know, website the other night and just kind of looking at just all the game, you know, all the teams that you have now and just all the games that you cover. I figured it'd be good to talk a little bit about just your thoughts on, you know, diversification, game diversification, and just trying to get a team like out there in as many games as possible, and kind of the benefits of that for a team.
Yeah, absolutely. This fall will be our 10th anniversary. 10 years ago, wow. I fired up the Complexity brand as a Counter-Strike team, and at the time, my only intention was to have a Counter-Strike team. Somewhere along the lines, I can't even recall why, we picked up a second game, and it was around that time after I picked it up, I started really looking at this as a business and, investing real sums of money into it as a business. And early on, I came to the conclusion, which not everyone shares, but I'm still pretty confident in it, that for a team-based organization like mine to really thrive and exist and properly represent sponsors over a period of time, you want diversification. Games are constantly changing. Audiences are constantly changing. If we'd done this show 5-6 years ago, probably 98% of your audience would have known exactly who I am, who I was. Today, an entirely new generation of gamers has grown up because they were, 6 years old back during the Counter-Strike glory days. And, you know, a lot of them will come on and be like, why is that dude wearing a red tie? Like, who the heck is this guy? And the demographic changes at such a speed. The games and the technology all change at such a speed where, in my opinion, the only way to remain a viable business in what we do at Complexity is to have diversification. If we sunk all our eggs in the 1.6 basket, we would be out of business today because the game is gone. Even with the title as mighty as StarCraft, it's my personal opinion, if you sink all your eggs in that basket, I mean, at some point in time, God forbid, there may come a day when StarCraft doesn't run a big enough audience to viably market your sponsor's products to, and then you're quickly out of the door from there. Mm-hmm. So I'm a big believer in diversification, not only from the business side, though, but I love games. I'm always trying different games. I love video games, and it's just a hell of a lot more interesting to me to associate with different gamers, to manage different gamers, to have different games under the Complexity flag that we can cheer for and work with, and variety is a spice of life to some extent, I think. So that's why I believe in diversification.
So what games right now do you feel like are the focal points?
Well, I mean, obviously you got League of Legends, StarCraft, Dota's a strong game, Heroes of New Earth. On the FPS side, it's less clear. Call of Duty is slowly climbing up this ladder of esports maturity and building real fan bases. We had an episode on the executives talk a little bit about where Call of Duty's at with Hasbro. I'm going down to the $1 million event this weekend. I'm not a giant fan of huge $1 million events and then developers disappearing for the rest of the year, but it's my hope that Activision won't do that.
They'll release another game in about 4 months, so you'll see them around.
That's the Call of Duty one, right?
Yeah.
But they're working with MLG, and I see some good things there. I mean, obviously, you've got where my heart started and still is, the Counter-Strike franchise, which is trying to climb the ladder, pardon the pun, back to its days of glory. And I'm getting tweeted, like, ask him about Counter-Strike, because, you know, that's where I came from. Those are my roots. My son sits over on this laptop over here every single day playing Counter-Strike Go. And I really hope the community can get there. For an organization like mine to invest in a top-tier team can cost $200,000 a year in salary and travel and maintenance and other things. And when you want to go into a game like that, you can't just think emotionally, or I would have been on CSGO the date they pop that thing on the internet. We'd love to be back in Counter-Strike. We just haven't found the right group, and we're not yet convinced that it's going to go anywhere. As Richard alluded to, Valve doesn't have the best history for supporting their titles. And in this day and age, games that don't have developer support, for better or worse, are going to have a tough time making it as an esport. That's just the reality where we are.
It needs to go free to play as well, I think. But that's a whole different show right there.
I mean, what about Dota 2? I mean, Dota 2 is... a lot of people have been talking about just, you know, Valve and Dota 2 recently.
Yeah, I mean, Valve's definitely been making a lot of...
Your mic's cutting out, Jason.
Cutting out? Can you hear me now?
That might be better, yeah.
Yeah, there we go.
Yeah, that's
better. International phenomenal. My staff...
it's going out again.
You hear me?
Yeah, now I can hear you.
Okay. I was saying what Valve did with the international and some of the things they did, like with the team things you could buy and share the revenue if the teams, were revolutionary, and I think it was fantastic. Mm-hmm. So I just hope they would take some of that and move it over to Counter-Strike. So, but we'll see. Don't get me on a Counter-Strike rant, or we'll be here a very long time.
You were late to the party with League of Legends, though, right? I mean, and a lot of the American organizations came to it pretty late, which I was surprised about.
We had a team previously, and unfortunately they just internally disintegrated. And as we saw how big the league was getting, it's just every time I talk about it, I call it a juggernaut, because that's what it is statistically in the world of esports. We knew we wanted to get back in, but there weren't a lot of options. You know, people had planted their flags. You got Solomids and CLGs and Kirk, and these wonderful... There weren't a lot of options out there. Then with the announcement of the LCS, we knew immediately we had to be in the LCS, but we weren't sure exactly how. So it's been a long road to get to where we are. We've got some great guys. They're not doing well, win-loss-wise, but we just made a change actually this week. And people that know me and my partner Jason Bass, we're just as happy getting a squad of guys, working with that squad, maybe tinkering with it, maybe changing a player or two and building our own team and building it to greatness, than just hiring whoever is hottest on the block at that moment. So
it's essential for a gaming organization to be in LCS right now, isn't it? Mm.
Absolutely. Jason, what happens? I have a question, actually. What happens? Because I like what you're saying about, you know, wanting to build a team as opposed to create a team or buy a team. What happens, though, if you guys are removed from the LCS after their mid-season reorganization stuff? Well, I mean, what happens with the team? I mean,
it took us so long to pick a team after we found out of LCS, because if you're investing all this money, we spend thousands of dollars each month, even, you know, in addition to what Riot's doing, which is very generous for the players and travel and everything. We're still investing a good amount of money in League of Legends. So if you're investing that money and got a five-man team, and then they don't, you know, the top four stay in, basically. The bottom four from North America got to battle it out with the contenders, who all want their spots at the big dance, right? So if we go into that, which we're going to, we're going to be bottom four, and then we're out, I mean, it's terrible. You've invested all this money, now you're not even at the dance anymore. So
not to bring this up, because we've talked about it before, but it's absolutely one of the most ridiculous formats I've ever known or seen, but because that's exactly what you're talking about, then you're like stuck. was, I'm just real quick curious because I don't want to stay on this too long, but was there a conversation with them about that format, about the fact that, hey, we're still going to be putting money into this, and then you're telling us that halfway through the real season we could just possibly be gone and out and our guys uprooted and have to move back home? Or was there any conversation with them about that?
My knowledge, none of the traditional larger team-based organizations were consulted to any serious level. Okay. And I could absolutely be wrong. I say that because after the details of LCS came out, several of us kind of got together in the old boys' room and smoked cigars. It's a joke.
I like what he just says. It's just the old boys' room. It is. You've just been confirmed. Some tweet that.
Yeah, exactly.
I love it. All right. Sorry.
With the older teams in the league where we had a lot of issues with things, being like, hey, we really want to be a part of this. What you're doing is great. But if you want, you know, so on and so forth. So they very well could have. Don't quote me. Perhaps they consulted with the others and just not me. I'm not saying I hate it or love it, but as far as I know, a lot of teams weren't consulted.
Okay. Just was wondering because we had talked about this in the past and didn't hear anything about it. But okay.
Yeah. So you know, given that you do like to build a team, you know, with that type of format, I mean, how, you know, how is that possible? Because, you know, you see teams that are, I feel, well, there's a kind of sense of desperation, you know, trying to get into LCS, right? And for some of the teams. And that's why some of the teams, you know, they literally, you know, will pick up a team and then they'll drop in and pick up another team type of thing. So, I mean, how hard is it for you guys to have to, I mean, it's even more bigger of a risk for you guys if you're going to take the approach that you do.
I've said this 100 times, management on any level, in any company, in any business, but especially in my opinion, in something as turbulent as esports, is much more an art form than a science. You know, if you had it your way, you just pick five guys, kind of take team potential, and you spend a lot kind of stirring them together, building a team, which is basically what I did with Counter-Strike way back in the old days. You got a new reality, right? You got companies paying you money each month to have championship competitive gamers competing at big events like those. Yes. So you got to get in there. You really don't have the time to start from the ground floor. So you always try to get the best possible scenario you can get within your budget and where you think you can get a return on investment. Mm-hmm. It's a little bit different each time. Sometimes you hit a home run and you look like you're a genius, and other times you completely fall flat on your face and you look like an idiot. And that's just kind of the nature of the beast when it comes to team-based organizations.
Okay, great. In regards to StarCraft, you know, obviously there was the news of, you know, you guys moving, just closing down the house, like, you know, late in 2012. Huh? And, you know, then you picked up the FCC. You know, since then there hasn't been much news, you know, coming from StarCraft 2 team. So is StarCraft a huge priority for you guys right now? Or, I mean...
Yeah, I mean, not only do we love the game... as owners and managers, we still play it. You know, it's obviously, just mathematically speaking, a game that you need to have some presence in if you do what we do for a living. Our big thing was we'd had a lot of ups and downs. I'll be straight with you. The complexity as a brand, we got into StarCraft late because none of us thought it was going to be big in the West. We completely were wrong, obviously. One of the biggest mistakes we've made in the last 5-6 years. So we've been playing catch up ever since. We've had some amazing players. We brought on Root and we had great times with them. We brought in several great Korean players. I mean, think about it. We had Nanawa on our team. We had Stefano sign for that controversy.
I mean, wait, how long? How long did you have him sign?
Like 24 hours or so before. Maybe 12 hours before it blew up. So we had, right. I mean, Stefano. We were 99% the way there with Thorzane before many people knew Thorzane. We have worked hard and we have scouted well, and it just seems every time we turn the corner, between our own mistakes and just pure bad luck in odd situations like people not wanting to honor contracts and other things, it's been a bumpy road for us, but we still love the game. So with Heart of the Swarm coming out, we're like, look, we've got some great guys in our team. You know, they may not be huge superstars. They might not get invited to all the podcasts or whatever. Let's keep what we've got, and let's see how this Heart of the Swarm thing pans out. Let the game come out. let's see how people are playing. You know, there's bound to be new stars that arise, and we want to find them early and bring them on. We'll have the next Thor Zane Stefano. Obviously, some of the people from Wings of Liberty, many maybe, are going to be great at this game because that's what they do all day. But I would bound to bet you there's going to be some people that are a little lesser known that are going to come and be standing on the big stage. So right now we're still a little bit in wait mode. We've had, what, one big Heart of the Swarm tournament? Is it one? The MLG?
Two, really. You know, I am in MLG. I guess I am.
Yeah, I am. It's the first.
What? That's right. You know, so we're definitely going to be coming back a little heavier in StarCraft, but right now we're kind of in a wait-and-see mode, and maybe a little gunshot, to be honest with you, because both Jason Bass and I feel like we're almost kind of cursed in this game. Like,
oh, no.
We tried it out, and we've had great people on our team, but it's just like, you know, sometimes you're trying to climb the hill and you keep falling flat on your face, and you're just like, let's stop and catch our breath a minute. And mm-hmm. I think that's kind of where we're at. We'll definitely be back for StarCraft.
Okay, that's great to hear. Great to hear. And your comment about podcasts, I mean, Kevin's on all the podcasts, so I don't know what you mean by that. So.
Kevin, unbelievably intelligent about the intricacies of the game, but, you know, there are just some people in StarCraft, like with anything, where people pick who they like, and they're popular, and that's just the way it's going to be, and they're on six podcasts a week, and every dang time you turn on Twitch, you see their face, and that's great. These people have worked hard and put in their time, and that's the way it is, but I'm personally kind of hoping for some fresh blood to liven up the mix in Heart of the Swarm.
Agreed.
Yeah, that would be nice. That would definitely be nice. Let's see, next thing I want to talk to you about has more to do with sponsorship. And mm-hmm. you know, I was talking to Jason, you know, your partner Jason Bass, and you know, I was hanging out with he and his wife like in SES earlier this year, and he mentioned just how great the whole royalty model is for you guys when it comes to sponsorship. In fact, I think you're the only team that I know of that really utilizes it to, you know, like to a great extent. So I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about that or not.
No, absolutely. Very, you know, you're almost like reaching in my Easter egg basket here, Chris. But I've spoken about
anything.
It.
You don't have to say anything you don't want. Yeah, it's all good.
You know, I'm a big believer in helping other people kind of learn different ways to bring revenue, even if they're competition to complexity. That's why I do the. That's why I've done, I think, 26 episodes mm-hmm. on the executives.
Which is awesome.
We've got to build it together and stop being so cutthroat and try to help each other. Our relationship with Sound Blaster, which is by far and away our biggest and now our longest relationship, is kind of based in a revenue royalty model. Obviously, I can't go into all the details. The basics are we get a small amount of cash to kind of help fund operations, and the rest is built off a royalty model. For those that don't know what a royalty is, if you go into a Best Buy or whatever, and you'll see a Complexity logo on their headsets. So each time they sell a headset, they give us a little bit of the money they made from that headset. This is beneficial in a couple ways because it enables a company to come in without a huge chunk of change sitting there that's just fixed. Mm-hmm. Now we become partners, basically. The better we market your product, the better more products you're going to sell and the more money we're going to make. It's the true quintessential partnership versus, hey, can you pay me $5,000 or $10,000 a month? Oh, your sales are down, you owe me $10,000. Too bad. Oh, your sales have tripled. Oh, damn. I guess you just owe me $10,000. It creates, in our belief, a long term where we're all in this together. Mm-hmm. Like, we go and consult on their products. We see these demos while they're doing it, and our players will test them and be like, look, we'll be honest with you, this sucks. Don't do it like this. This doesn't work right, or it doesn't feel comfortable, or whatever. So we're fully vested in making sure their products are going to be the best products they can be for gamers. And if they have a really bad quarter and we're not doing good and we're not moving their products to the best of our abilities, or if the Complexity logo on that box just becomes meaningless because we don't have enough fans or people don't want to support esports, they don't give a damn, then none of us are making money. So it's sink or swim together, and that's kind of the basics of it. And it's been successful on many levels, and we work with them on different things around the world. We just throw a huge Heroes of New Earth tournament for them. So it's marketing on many levels based around a royalty agreement. Kind of not unique in the real world, but I think it's fairly unique in the esports world.
Have you ever had any embarrassing moments where, like, players have been, I don't know, photographed using rival headsets or anything like that?
Gosh, I'm going to throw something across the room. If I had a dollar for every time I some guy turns on his camera and he's got his old Razor headset on because he broke his sound blaster in a fit of rage an hour earlier, and I'm just calling these people up like, come on. It's a whole other conversation about game. Help make me a little crazy. But yeah, that happens on occasion. Absolutely.
Hey, you said something and people might have just skimmed over, but people don't realize you still have a Heroes of Neuroth team. You may be the only large team that has one, and I completely support that because, oddly enough, people don't realize it, but there's a lot of good tournaments for that game and that pay. And why not have a team if you're going to keep winning every event, huh?
I mean, some people, you know, that are cynical kind of consider it the redheaded stepchild too, and League of Legends. But the statistics and the viewer and the fan base is significant. And, you know, we have a top, conservatively, I'd say a top three team in the world, probably top two on any given day. And they do a good job and draw in huge streamer numbers. And it doesn't get a lot of attention like from the StarCraft scene or other scenes, but that's back to diversification. We could be, you know, we're top probably, well, we'll find out this weekend, but we're top five in the world at COD. We're top two probably in the world at Heroes of New Earth. To these communities, even though the StarCraft community that watches your show might be like, so what? To these communities, big deal. And that enables us to effectively market to them and to drive, you know, their eyeballs to our sponsor social media and their partner social media. And when you add up different games together, not only does it provide you longevity, but it provides you with a bigger nest egg to market for your partner than if you're, say, in just one game and that's your sole reliance.
Right, right. Makes sense.
So we recently, you guys pulled on Newegg for a sponsor, which is congrats on that.
Yeah, that was mostly Jason Bass, by the way.
Oh, was it? Okay. Good job, Jason.
Honestly, for years. This has been an ongoing, hey, yeah, that sounds good, for like probably 3.5-4 years. So it was very, very enjoyable to finally get that one done. And they have some great people over at Newegg. We're super excited to work with them. Mm-hmm. And just totally transparent, not only is Newegg itself sensational, they are very open about basically trying to decide how candid I should be. when you have the opportunity to work with a company like Newegg, you're all of a sudden introduced and kind of hanging out with a lot of other marketing reps for a lot of other different companies, because that's what Newegg does, right?
Yeah.
They sell products for a lot of other people. So it's beneficial on many levels, and there were a few people I think that really grasped how big a relationship with Newegg was. But most people kind of went over their head. They're kind of like, oh, Newegg, great. But if you study the business model and you're a team manager or you're in the league, whatever, relationships like these are what you build your future on. So we're super excited to be working with Newegg. They're great people over there.
So let's be honest, you get 50% off everything on the site.
We don't have like a flat discount. That would be sweet.
Oh, damn, I was gonna get you to buy me some stuff, dude. very cool, very cool.
No, that's the first thing our players ask too. Like, what can I buy first? Where's my coupon code? We're like, it doesn't work.
All right, so fun question. So are you pretty much going to be a lifer for esports here?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I have worked in different areas in the past. You know, I owned a law firm in Atlanta, I had 5 metro offices and still ran Complexity. You know, I may move on and do other things. Right now, past 3 or 4 months, I've sat down and spoken with several companies, flown San Francisco, met with different companies, because I want to get involved and do more. I'll always have my heart in Complexity. I'll always, you know, God willing, be one of the owners, you know, if we can keep the doors open. But there's times and seasons in life, so I see myself probably moving on and trying to contribute to the greater scene in a different capacity. I just haven't figured out exactly where that's going to be. Mm-hmm. I've been very blessed after I sold my law firms and moved to L.A. Quick story. I went through periods of my life where I just kind of had an awakening to the importance of being a dad and spending more time with my kids. It was the month of December leading up to Christmas, and literally from December 1st to like Christmas Eve, I didn't see my kids for maybe a total of 30 minutes because I'd be at my law firm all week, and I had three consecutive weekends. I went to New York, Dallas, I went to LA, all for different esports events, and I literally get home Christmas Eve by the time I get out of the office, and I was just like, I can't do this. I don't want to be this kind of father that, you know, great, you live in a nice house, really know who your dad is. Mm-hmm. So after I came to work at CGS and sold my law firm, you know, CGS closed its doors, and I was fortunate enough to kind of take time and just spend time being a dad and running Complexity from home and, you know, attending some events. But I used to attend like everything religiously, but now it's more about my kids. Thankfully, they're both in school now and out of the house, to where I have a lot of free time during the day. I'll do some work on different things here locally and on Complexity, but I'm kind of getting to the point in my life where I'm like, I'm ready to work, you know, 50, 60 hours a week outside the house. Yep. It'll all be in conjunction with being a good dad, but it's time for me to get back on the horse. So hopefully this year I'll find the right place. I've spoken with really intriguing and compelling brands that are working in the esports space and see if I'm the right fit for them and vice versa, and we'll just see where it goes.
Okay, yeah, that'd be amazing to see you in other capacities, because obviously your experience and you're a smart guy too, so it'd be great to see you do a lot more too.
That requires me to not own Complexity. Complexity is my third. I've got Allie.
Your sound's going out again.
Hello. I think it's Skype.
It might be, yeah.
I've got Allie, I've got Jordan, I've got Complexity, and I've made it abundantly clear to everyone I spoke to. I will step down at day-to-day management, but I will not relinquish my ownership shares in Complexity to accept any job because it's just too important to me.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's cool. So all you Complexity fans don't have to worry about anything. I guess Jason will always be part of that. But no, that's cool that you know, thanks for sharing just, you know, some of that personal stuff there, because, you know, I don't think a lot of people understand, how much of a sacrifice it is. And, you know, John, you know, I have kids, John has kids, you know, Richard, you know, who knows about him, but...
I might have a couple.
Is that what you're saying? Like, it's like, that is it. And it's going to be some, like, I'm going to get a letter just arrived to my house, like, you know, by the way, you owe this much in back payment. It's like, that is it. Okay. Don't believe everything you've heard about the UK. Like, you know, we are civilized people over here. Like, not all of us are, like, you know, just out there, like, fathering legitimate kids and, you know. But we'll see them later on. 18 years' time, we'll catch up.
Awesome.
But on a serious note, like, I don't know how anyone does it with kids, like, esports, I mean. Because, you know, I'm having a hard enough time, you know, like... in my 30s now, been around for a long time, like, motivation's a constant problem because, you know, it's very hard to interact with a younger community. And I think as well, though, like, just everyday life shit. Like, how am I going to cultivate a relationship to a point where I can actually father a kid if every weekend, you know, I'm actually out, like, you know, at a different event, and then through the week I'm hunched over my laptop, you know, like, just... constantly writing or putting in a 50-60 hour week. Like, people don't realize how pervasive a lifestyle esports is. Yes. Because if you're near a PC or you're near the internet, you can be working, and people know that. And if you're driven, you kind of want to be working. It's very mm-hmm. hard to kind of get pulled away from that. I mean, I know Jason is a workhorse. I mean, like, always above and beyond the Call of Duty with Complexity to help get it, you know, where it was and where it is now. And I mean, like, that sort of dedication, it comes at a cost. It really does. And you know, people don't realize that kind of outside of the esports sphere, but again, it's like everything. If you give a one hand, generally you're taking away from something else, you know.
Yeah, here's props to all the wives and significant others out there.
Because, the esports widows.
Oh, my God. Seriously, it's just
that's
like,
what we need to set up. The esports widows fund, so they can all rent out Magic Mike on DVD or you know whatever it is they need while you're away at events, right?
I mean, it is really frustrating, and John knows this, and like my partner Jason Bass is married with two kids, and other people that have done the esports life, the esports circuit, because I want to be at everything. Like, yeah. I always want to be there, and I make few events, you know, a year now, and people are like, oh my gosh, where you been? It's just, you know, it's like, you just got to choose priorities. Like, I still invest a ton of time. My wife was here. She would tell you, you know, my kids to Palm Springs for a couple days last week for their spring break, and I'm still on my iPad with, you know, wireless on it and my phone and checking everything and reading everything. And like you said, it's very hard for somebody like me and like my partner too, when you're watching these events from home and you're seeing things or you're reading things that took place and you're knowing about the networking opportunities you're missing, you know that it's just very hard because nothing can replace being there. Nothing can replace being at these events and networking and talking to people. It's been very tough. We've done a pretty darn good job in Complexity of building kind of a sub-management team of people that know our philosophy. They know how we do things. They know what we would do in any given situation. So we've been able to kind of replicate ourselves to a certain extent, but it's still really hard not being there. It's just, as you get to be older and you get to be a father or a mother, you have to be like, look, here's my priorities, and sometimes it's going to be tough, but you got to stick by it, and that's just what both Jason Bass and I have done. And Complexity probably suffers from it. There's probably deals we could have had if I was at all these events, if I was able to make all these trips, or if I didn't have to come home early because my son had a game or whatever. I mean, just today we had to move the show because my son has a basketball game at 4:15 that I didn't know about, and I'm the only one around this afternoon that could take him. So you guys are kind enough to move the show, but it's just one example of thousands that any dad out there would be like, oh, yeah, you know. So it's definitely interesting and frustrating when you know that you could be giving more to something you love so much, but there's just something out there that you love a little bit more.
Yeah, I can completely relate, dude.
Just a little bit more.
I can completely relate. Yeah.
Sometimes I don't love my 15-year-old more than esports.
See, I don't have teenagers yet, so I don't have to, you know, yeah. I mean, that'd be a different story. It'd be like, oh, man.
here's a question for you, John. Would you keep your kids away from esports? Like,
no.
I am honestly, like, always torn on this question. I get asked all the time, like, you know, when you do have a kid, when I get time to do it, obviously, I'm looking forward to that. It's going to be great, no doubt. Like, would you want your child involved in esports? And I don't know how I'd answer that, man. It changes from day to day. When I'm having a great day, yeah, awesome. When I'm having a bad day and it's like, okay, I'm not going to open that Hotmail account. That's just full of hate mail now. it's an absolute no. So,
well, I mean, it's not like I, you know, pull them into it, but I mean, they know. I mean, my daughter's going to be home. Actually, she's probably home now, and she knows that, you know, my wife's probably told her, you know, at 4 o'clock, you can probably run in there, and she knows, oh, Dad, you're doing another show tonight, or do you have to admin a tournament? You know, so she kind of understands it. My son, of course, has grown up for a long time, and anybody that plays Xbox games, especially Call of Duty, in which you're actually online, you've been exposed to quite a bit of what esports can bring as far as negativity goes. So he's been around it for quite some time. He knows what I do and everything. So, but yeah, I mean, there are definitely dark sides to it that you may not want to, you know, bring your kids involved into it. But I mean, I'll probably bring my son to an event this year. I'd like to for him to see kind of what I do on a different level. I'd love to have him go to like an MLG event and watch the Call of Duty stuff, or even QuakeCon. I'll bring him to QuakeCon and let him sit there for 3 days in front of the computer in a dark room, you know, with a bunch of other nerds and see what happens. But it more for experimental reasons, really.
I mean, like, having your kids involved with, like, you know, being a attendee and that sort of thing, I mean, that's no different than taking your kids to the ball game, you know what I mean, or a basketball game or anything like that. That's kind of what we want, right? I mean, we want, like, father and sons and daughters going together to these events and just enjoying a weekend, right? So, yeah, I mean, that kind of say the same thing.
As a great comment in the Twitch TV chat, by the way, it says, Chris's kids already have 300 APM in StarCraft.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, right.
Can you
okay, so truth, guys. My wife will not let my son play StarCraft.
There you go, veto.
She will not let him play, even though he watches it like with me, like and everything. She just won't let him play. She'll let him play everything else but StarCraft right now, which is like, it's just crazy.
Yeah, I mean, but, in my household, my kids are
not shooters. Sorry, not shooters, but just. StarCraft and shooters. No,
my kids are completely integrated, and at first I was kind of like, maybe I'll bring him in slow or whatnot. But I think whether your dad's a golfer or a fisherman or he drives a big truck or what, you know, he likes tractors. When you're a little kid, you look up to your dad with like these, you know, big eyes, and you want to be like him. And then you turn a teenager, right, John? But you know, so when my kids constantly see me sitting on the computer, and then I'm playing games and I'm doing things, it just kind of came naturally. And obviously we. You know, he doesn't get to chat on any of these things, and I'm constantly moderating and turning stuff off. When he plays CSGO, I had to turn off the voice chat and all this other stuff. But we play tons of games together. I was trying to get you a link, but if you go to my Twitter and go to the photos on my Twitter, I don't even know if that's publicly accessible. I'm kind of a Twitter newbie. Awesome? But like, you'll see all the pictures of Jordan and I playing together and Allie, and then we've got Korean pro players in town, and they're, they're playing games together, and then they'll go down to Anaheim and hang out with all the pros, and this is, you know, this is the life they lead. Am I going to force them into anything? Absolutely not. But when they see me so passionate about it, and they see me love esports so much as John's kids do, you know, I would put money on that they're both going to be very good little gamers. And, you know, Jordan especially, he's probably going to be a pro gamer at something. It's like Tiger Woods grew up playing golf. My kid grew up on Halo and Counter-Strike. And it's a family activity around here because, you know, I think at the end of the day, as long as we're spending time together and we're bonding over something. Yeah.
And it makes sense, too.
Of course, there's some things, but.
It's kind of, you know, it's a little overlap too, right? For, you know, so it makes complete sense even from a time.
Well, it's also the whole idea of growth and the underbelly. I mean, these kids are going to grow up and they're going to understand what esports is, or what gaming in general is, and how it can be competitive. And the more that happens, the more mainstream that it becomes, because you don't have to be on TV for this to grow. I mean, we've all established that. You just need to educate people on what it is that we do. I mean, there was a point where I just was like, I didn't really explain it, what I did, what I was doing on my weekends and things like that to people that didn't understand it. But now it's at a point where I just do it anyway. And there, obviously there's still a lot of people that their minds are just blown. I was sitting in class telling class one day what I did. And this girl was like, what? This stuff what? There's actually games that people play, you know, competitively. And her mind was blown, she said. And but you just continue to educate people, and that means your kids. The more they're educated, then they grow up, then they tell their buddies, and that just starts the whole process.
Right. All right, why don't we take some questions? Kurt's, like, dying to ask a question, so.
Oh, no.
So, you know, why don't we start some Q&A here? And you guys cool with that?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
All right, here we go. If you guys want to ask a question, go ahead and just add me on Skype. Skype is ChimeMV. Kurt says, I have a couple questions that I just have to ask. So, Kurt is Key Hunt, guys, for they don't know. Oh, man, he doesn't even answer. Kurt, are you there? Is he not even answering? What's going on, Kurt?
Maybe it's your Skype.
All right.
Skype.
Nope. Can you hear me?
Hey, what's up?
Yeah, I can hear you now. He's there.
Hey, crap.
What's up, Kurt? Guys?
Everybody doing all right?
Good. Yes. So hit us with these questions, man.
All right. Well, first off, Jason knows that there's few people in the community that I can pretty much ask questions to and continuously, but I'm going to try to cut it down. You're one. Alex is one. Craig is one. It just, they never really end. I got a few that I think will, you know, or help, you know, general questions, and, you know, one that's pretty more personal. What I'm wondering is, you know, you and Complexity and everybody have been through a lot of ups and downs, and ups and downs and more ups and downs and sometimes more downs than ups. And I'm wondering what scares you, like what worries you with esports now? Like, is there anything in the future that you see as being a problem for either you or Complexity or just esports in general?
I don't know if this is really scare or worries, but maybe more of a disappoint. One thing that disappoints me is, and it's just the nature of this business, the nature of the beast per se, is it's, you know, generally up till now been kind of an age group thing, where, how do I put this? There's not enough appreciation for the history, if that makes sense. And I think probably everybody on this show will agree with me, to where there have been people, many people, that have been laying sidewalk that we could all walk down. We've been laying the runway so this plane could take off. And a lot of times when I read Reddit and stuff and certain names come up or old teams or whatever, it's just people in general can be so oblivious. It kind of takes some of this wind out of my sails sometimes. I don't want to be e-famous. I all that stuff is for the birds. But when I see just such a complete and utter lack of knowledge about the history of certain things, it's very disheartening to me. If that makes any sense. And I think, like,
it makes perfect sense, and you know it.
Like Sir Scoots and things, you know, there's so many inside jokes now because, sadly, nobody knows what you're talking about. I mean, how many kids play competitive games, never even heard of something as basic as, like, CPL? How many kids that are really into esports have a clue who Angel Munoz is? And the list goes on and on and on. And it's just like, unlike traditional sports, I think we're kind of unique, where a lot of people that were following, like, say, Counter-Strike in 2004 maybe have moved on and they're busy getting out of college and getting their job and getting married. And a lot of these kids were, like, 6 years old, so why would they care or even understand how certain games and StarCraft and Counter-Strike and Quake all kind of, you know, convalesced to make what we have now? And in being an old-timer, that's just, I don't know, disheartening. It makes me sad. I don't know if it's being scared about anything, but, you know, I've mentioned several times I'm a huge history buff and I can watch History Channel all day. And if you don't learn from the past and the mistakes of the past, the old phrase, you're gonna repeat them. So if there's no young leaders out there that know our history, are we ever going to get anywhere? Are we just going to keep paving the runway and never take off?
Just following on from that, Jason, before we go to Kurt's next question, though, what about people who, like, they've got the history, but actually it's not that much to it, and they kind of dine out on this, like, one little thing that they did. Can you think of can you think of any guys like that in esports, maybe?
Oh, Richard, I love you, man.
Hey, man, like, I'm just saying.
I think that's natural. You get old, you know. I still have friends that talk about our exploits in high school football, and we're all state players and stuff. Every time I see them, they want to talk about high school football because that was like their one moment.
They're prime.
You know?
They're prime.
We share the stories. It's like, do you tell all your friends? No, I loved it back then, but it's, you know, I don't talk about it anymore. But I guess it's part of getting old.
Oh, man. So I had a follow-up question, too, to what you were talking about. Is it so much just the education part of it, or just a respect part of you know, folks just not knowing the history?
Yeah, it's a mix of not knowing and a mix of not giving a damn. Mm-hmm. Okay. I think the not giving a damn is much more concerning to me than the not knowing, because if you give a damn, you can always learn, right?
Yeah.
It's these people that come in and they're like, look, I only play ABC game. I don't care about anything. I don't care anything that got here. This is the only game in the world. They've got blinders on. They don't care. You know, somebody who deserves respect, somebody who's put in their time, gets mentioned in a conversation like, who the hell is that? I don't give a crap. That was for, you know.
Right.
I think as you get older, that stuff bothers you. When you're young, you're just like, that's the first thing that came to mind with this question.
So. Right.
Yeah, it comes to my mind daily when reading Reddit or anything else, or I know it comes to yours. Another quick question is, one of the things that shaped how I viewed esports for a long time was the Team 3D COL rivalry. And I think most people from CS, at least, would agree. Do you worry that there are no more rivalries? Like, and I'm talking about there's rivalries within teams and within games, but with a full organizational rivalry.
I do a bit, and that is one of the things, to be completely transparent, that I really don't necessarily like about StarCraft. When you get a 1v1 game, people are going to fall in love with and follow players. And that's great. It's its own kind of thing. I personally kind of come from the team background. John was talking about it earlier. You love a team or follow a team or root for a team versus a region when we talked about that. It's a little disappointing to me, but I just think it's natural. You know, when you get 1v1 games, you kind of follow your favorite player, and you might not care if he's on Complexity or Liquid or EG or Fnatic or whatever, because that's your player. You'll cheer for that team while he's there. The minute he's gone, I don't care about that team anymore. And that's not good or bad. I just think it's different than the team model, because like when I follow Call of Duty now, I mean, these kids get behind Optic and stuff, and God forbid you say the slightest bad thing about Optic, you will get 3,000 tweets at you, and they will be so mad and burning down your house. And so there's still like team support and rivalries in team-based games. But I think, you know, for the most part, when you have a lot of 1v1 games or like StarCraft that's dominated the scene for a couple of years, you won't see it as much. But if you ask League of Legends players about Solomid versus CLG or, you know, Curse versus, you know, and it could get pretty heated. I think it's still there, but many of us have been kind of in the StarCraft universe where, in the West at least, like TL versus EG is probably the best storyline. And even then, it's kind of, I don't know how
that could be a storyline anymore.
What do you mean? They're like partners now.
I don't know how that's still a storyline.
You know what I'm saying? It's like, oh, they're going to battle it out. They got these great personalities and intriguing players. But I just think of the 1v1 game, it's much harder to have. Yeah. If we ever get a real big FPS to come along again, I think you'd see more of a Complexity 3D rivalry of old pop up somewhere.
Well, it's really hard to. I was just going to say as well, it's real hard to foster these kind of rivalries in a kind of industry where we're applying this so much importance on this almost like faux respect, like, you know, where it's like you have to kind of, you can't say anything bad about anyone. So it's very hard to have a rivalry with someone if you can't smack talk, right? Mm-hmm. Because then you just get, you know, BM, whatever, right? So, I mean, there has to be some sort of leeway. But I do think it's a shame. We've got this very, sanitized approach to rivalries now. Like, I mean, I see it in LCS all the time where it's like every game they try and hype it up like it's a mega rivalry, and it's like it's not a rivalry. These guys like each other, they're living together, playing with each other, they don't really care who wins, just as long as the gravy train keeps rolling. Let's not pretend. It's not the same as Counter-Strike was when it was do or die, right? Like, it actually meant something and people went wild about who won and who lost, you know?
I guess it's kind of like UFC in a way, right? I mean, those guys really don't hate each other for the most part. It's more a show, right, than anything.
Well, it's okay to have mutual respect, but, you know, especially since you're playing in the same game. But I agree. I'd love to see a lot more just, you know, my team is better than your team, or at least my, you know, my jersey looks better than yours. Well, yours sucks, you know. I just want to see more of that.
It'd be a lot different, John. if there was
Call of Duty, man.
If there were parity in the infrastructure of the teams and the support, you know, it's not a fair game right now between all the the teams are all at different places, you know, and so it's hard to actually, oh, my team's better than yours. Well, that's probably true.
In esports right now are all about games. Like the most passionate rivalries are like, you know, it's League of Legends versus Dota. You know, it's like Counter-Strike versus Call of Duty, or 1.6 versus CSGO. The most passionate rivalries all stem from what game you play. That's what people probably identify with the most these days, and that's what gets people riled the most, rather than brand, an organization, a team, a player, whatever you want to call it. It's if you are part of that community, you get to, you know, trash talk other communities.
Which is my worry of developers getting too involved and fragmenting the overall industry of esports. Then it just becomes my game is better than your game, and then you know, one game dies out or the developer pulls funding, now all of a sudden the other community just gets to laugh their asses off at the other, you know, at that community and say, ha-ha,
see? I just remember Gotfrag threads going on for days, you know, with Go3D, Go COL, Go3D, Go COL. And then, that, you know, a few Go JMCs thrown in there for good measure. But that's what it was, you know. So I miss it. I miss it a lot. But anyway, I could go on forever, but I'm going to ask one last question that's more of a personal one.
All right, last one.
All right. This is a question I've wanted to ask for a long time, and I don't know if you would have answered it until recently. I'm not going to get too mean with it, but I was just thinking the other day about the SIVO leak. SIVO, the infamous SIVO meeting leak. Mm-hmm. For people that don't know what I'm talking about, you know, you can probably Google it.
You're getting really obscure for this audience.
I am, I know, but I have to ask. A lot of people, you know, considered that a conspiracy theory for a long time, and they were a conspiracy theory. But I want to know just how big that was for you when it happened, and how pissed you were. You know, I just want to know, because at the time, whenever would ask you or ask Charlie Plitt, it would be like all public relations. You know.
It wasn't, you know, it was a private conversation basically taped and leaked, and it wasn't ideal by any stretch of the imagination, but I try not to burn bridges just across, you know, a little puddle, and I knew Charlie and I were going to be friends and you know, colleagues for many years, so a little slap on the wrist or in many, many I'm sorry's on his end, and it was over.
I'd say switching the source is more than a puddle, but but anyway, man, I appreciate it, guys.
Okay, you great.
Bet, thanks.
Thanks, Kurt.
Thanks, Keham.
All right, let's see. Nico Schneider has a question. He doesn't have a mic, so he would normally have called in. He says, how important is it for an organization to have personalities, especially in StarCraft? Is it more important to have players who win and stay in the shadows, or to have people who aren't doing that good but have personalities and egos?
So it's an EG question, right? It's an evil genius's question, is it? I see.
Hey, man, those guys win too.
I mean, the easy answer is you want both. I've always kind of, being a purist, if you study my I keep going back to Counter-Strike because that's really when I had the most minute-by-minute, you know, hands in any team we've ever had in developing and helping the guys and growing it. But if you study that team, I didn't care if they were good-looking. I didn't care if they had, you know, some awesome podcast personalities. I just want to kick everybody's ass. Nowadays, I think just because we are at our heart to stay financially viable, we are at our heart marketing agencies. So there has to be some personality. If you've got a bunch of winners that are just drab and they're standing there holding a trophy, companies don't really want to pay money for that. Tiger Woods and Michael Jordan got the big bucks, not only because they were successful, but because they were compelling personalities. And in real sports, you'll see some people that are better, you know, they either look better and maybe they speak better, they'll get better endorsement deals than somebody who's statistically better on the basketball court, for example. It's just the world we live in. I think you need a little bit of both. In my perfect world, it would be about, hey, let's go see who can win. The person that wins gets all the crowns and all the prizes. But I do think you need some of both.
Okay, great. I see Steve here is just posting a question. So you guys talked about segregation for a long time earlier from the angle of race and regionalization. But what about gender? There's been a couple of big female-only tournaments recently. I know Richard will be aware of the Copenhagen Games Woman Tournament. To break that down into a question, since women in general don't seem to have any physical or mental disadvantage in esports, as could be argued in some real-world sports, what do you think... When do you think of it being mixed in females? Does it create further segregation, or is it necessary to attract girls to gaming?
Well, I'm
not for me.
Richard, you want to take that one?
There's no way to talk about the issue of gender, right, in esports without coming across like a sexist dinosaur. Like, Rachel will be on my case no matter what I say again. Twitter's going to blow up, right? So, look, I'll just say
I get it. Well, it's like, Okay, go ahead.
I'll just say what I think most people think, even the people who don't want to say it think, and that is that one of the cool things about esports is that it is a great leveler. I think that you know, certainly with physical sports, even in physical sports, we're starting to see boundaries being broken. There was a female kicker going for an NFL draft recently. Yeah. She got injured and didn't make it, and blah blah blah. But whatever. So we're starting to see those physical boundaries come down a little bit anyway. But like in esports, they aren't necessarily there. And I'm not going to try and go into the pseudoscience of it, like a lot of people do, and talk about left brain hemisphere and right brain. I'm not going to do any of that. Just on the surface of it, what I see, there's no theoretical reason why a female gamer can't get to the top of an esports mm-hmm. tree. Now, I understand that it's not exactly a great environment to come into for a female, because you know, a lot of the guys that play in the online community haven't even seen a girl before, haven't even, let alone interact with one or have their ass kicked by one on a deathmatch server or whatever. So obviously it is going to be a hostile environment, and it's going to be unpleasant for them, you know, and I totally get that, and that sucks. And that definitely needs to change. But again, if we take away the kind of virgin stroke nerd component of esports, we're going to lose a big part of our demographic. There's no getting away from it. So it needs to be a process of education and enlightenment, right? So to get there, how do we create that education and enlightenment? Do we create education and enlightenment through segregation? History tells me no, that's not a cool thing to do. So what we should be doing is we should be saying to all the sponsors that want to fund girls-only tournaments, which, by the way, if you've ever seen a girls-only tournament, they're disgusting. They are disgusting. They basically make the, you know, the organizations make the girls dress up, make them wear low-cut tops or hot pants, pink Zinich. Again, the Counter-Strike team springs to mind. They're doing, like, nudie calendars and stuff. Like, come on, right? Like, this isn't about competitive esports. It's actually... It's actually debasing the women that want to have the right to compete, and they shouldn't buy into that. The teams I would respect and the individuals I would respect are the people who would come into a male-orientated tournament environment and just try, you know, give it their best shot. And eventually, over time, they're going to get better and better. And eventually, it's not out of the question that we're going to see females, you know, start to place at events. So I've never been... Look, I support females in gaming. I don't support female gaming. And I think there is a distinction people need to make.
So Jason, you guys have you guys ever had a female player on your rosters? Or in any game?
Oh, goodness. You know, I don't believe we've had a rostered female... Oh, yeah, sorry. In CGS, we had a female because there's a female versus female division for Dead or Alive. I'm trying to think, because goodness, I don't want to miss somebody and hurt somebody's feelings. I don't believe we've had a female roster like starter in traditional games that we've played. No.
Okay.
It's not like you said. I'm not against it at all. Mm-hmm. To be honest, from a business side, I would love if some beautiful young lady came up in any of the popular games and started kicking everybody's butt and wanted to play for Complexity. I could market that. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah,
it's unique. If she's got a good personality, if she's attractive in your world class StarCraft II player, that's marketable. I'm sorry. It's marketable. She's going to make more money. Complexity would make more money. It's just the world we live in.
Yeah.
I have zero bad things to say about women in esports. I welcome them. Absolutely. I hope we could see some champions. I think there's great storylines that we're missing out on. Why exactly, like Richard said, why females generally don't take to video games or competitive video games as much as males is probably a whole new show, but I would have them in, and I would not bat an eye if there was a really good female player in a game. I would love to have her on board.
Yeah, it's purely a numbers thing right now. I mean, there's just so... I mean, I don't even know what the ratio is, but the ratio is just ridiculous. You know, male to female ratio in gaming right now, so...
Esports is a sausage fest, Chris. There's no doubt about it. Like, newsflash, right?
Yeah, that's true. That's true. And it's too bad, because I don't know. I'm a supporter of female leagues and that sort of thing, just to... as a growing point. It's the kind of same thing as the whole regionalization thing. It's a place to to cultivate something, and then, you know, maybe, you know, kind of grow it to what I think we all would want. Yeah, so anyways, yeah, so Jason, 10 minutes. 10 minutes we got to go, guys, so let's see.
Well, let's see. Got about 10 minutes for I've got to run out, but...
Okay, cool. Why don't we take one more quick one, and then we'll... actually, do we even have another? Is there one in chat, John, do you know? Maybe we can call it there. There was
one question that was specific to Richard. We had talked about, we'd asked Jason if he was an esports lifer. Yeah. So a couple of people were wondering if Richard was the same way. What his thoughts on if he was an esports lifer, if he was going to keep doing this.
I look
this.
At guys like Jason and like I want to say yes, but I don't know. Like I'm not like him. Like he's got a very thick skin, and I think he's got qualities about him that make him certainly a lot more likable than my personal qualities in the broader context. Yeah, bromance. I don't know if I can say I'm a lifer, really. Like, I got so many things I want to do outside of esports, and I fell into esports by accident. I fell into esports because literally I just got kind of laid off from another newspaper, and I just wanted to keep writing and see what happened, and the rest is kind of a decade's worth of terrible history. So so I don't know. I don't know if I can say I'm a lifer. But then again, if you'd asked me in 2004, like, would I still be doing it now in 2013, I'd have probably said you'd be out of your mind. So, you know, I think it's one of those things. In the same way, it's pervasive. It's kind of addictive as well. It's very hard to kind of give up. Like, I don't know what I would do with all the free time. So who knows? But I've definitely got other plans.
Cool. All right. Well, why don't we wrap things up? Jason, it's been a pleasure. I think we ended up being just more of a chill and just, you know, talk. And that's what's really cool about having you on is that I knew we could just have a nice, you know, pretty just laid back and, you know, just shoot the shit type of conversation. You have any shout outs, thank yous you want to do at this point?
Oh, thank you very much for having me on. And it's an honor to be on your 50th episode. And, you know, Chan, I will tell you one thing. You are a very persistent show host. You have probably hit me up 300 times in the last 8 months.
Oh, come on. Now you're making me sound like a stalker or something.
Maybe
dude.
That's an exaggeration. No. It wasn't like that. It was always like, oh, maybe I can do it. It was my bad is what I'm getting at. And it's like, oh, I can't make it. Oh, I got to be out of town. And, you know, I'm sorry it took so long, and I really am happy to have been on the show. Thank you very much. Thank you to the other hosts, John, and, of course, my bromance buddy. Good luck on the show. And thanks to our sponsors at Complexity that make everything happen, Soundblaster, Newegg, Origin PCs, PNY, Creative, Twitch, QPad, GA Clothing, and Nation Voice.
Nice.
But I say it with a chuckle, but I mean it sincerely. There would be no Complexity if it wasn't for those guys. So thank you, and please consider supporting the companies that support mine. Thanks again, guys.
Good deal. Thank you, awesome. Jason, for coming on.
Exactly. Thank you again.
Finally.
And hopefully we'll do it again some soon. And and guys, watch The Executives. Awesome, awesome show. And it's like I feel like our shows are kind of along the same lines, you know? So I mean, just not along the same lines, but just the same demographic of people, I guess, we target. So definitely check his show out whenever it's on. It's usually on Wednesdays, right? I think that's whenever it's on.
Yeah, you know, we've had a terrible track record the last few months for the same reasons it took me so long to get on your show.
Yeah.
When Odie's traveling, I'm not. When I'm traveling, Odie's not. And hotel internet, during the time of the day. And then we had a new co-host that we were going to announce, and then he was – it's just been like – I'm to the point where I still think there's value in the show, but I'm just going to make them when we get a chance to make them, because it's – The Executives is mainly about the VOD archives.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been a little frustrated this year. It's like, dude, it's been like two and a half months since we've had a show. Odie was in L.A. for a month with this league team and always busy, and then I was out of town. But, yeah, definitely check out the VODs, and we'll try to get some more episodes up at some point this year.
Yeah, definitely. Those VODs are really good. They go through a lot of, you know, just I always keep thinking of the Kurt like proposal one. That's a really good one. Like the recent one of the recent ones.
Yeah, it was good. Yeah, you did a great job.
Richard, do you want to do your shoutouts?
I don't need to. I'm an established member of the show now.
Oh, we always do shoutouts. We still do shoutouts.
Really? Do we do shoutouts?
Oh, my yes, God. We do.
Do you not remember the last time I was on as a guest and I said, I hate doing shoutouts. I find them so base.
Thank you. How about thank you?
I'd like to thank you for choosing me as a co-host because...
you actually had no choice. You were the last one left.
John, why are you ruining my secrets?
Who turned you down? Like that's what it must have been. Real.
John wanted a wingman twin. Remember?
Exactly.
That's a pretty small demographic right there. Yeah. No, like I think it's going to be awesome. And I've said I'm looking at kind of moving out of Counter Strike after all this time because I just. That community just sickens me on a daily basis. So I'm just looking forward to like doing more in StarCraft and across emerging titles. I want to get involved in Smite and titles like this that I think need a push and would benefit from having experienced heads make a contribution. So I think this is a big part in my renaissance, climbing the ladder.
There you go.
Good deal. Well, welcome aboard.
Yeah, welcome aboard, buddy. Definitely some fun weeks ahead. John, you want to do shots?
Yeah, I'm tired. Well, shout outs to you guys. And I always, thank the fans, thank those that showed up and watched today. And if you felt like you got something out of the show today, definitely spread the word. Because we do put up VODs as well and MP3 versions of it. And, you can listen while you're in the car or whatever. But, so definitely a thanks to all those that tuned in. Thanks for Richard for accepting the invite to be a part of the show now, and that was good. A shout out to my guys at IGL that are working. We now have three coders just working their tails off in trying to get a lot of what we want done put together. So shout out to those guys and all the admins that are trying to get their foot in the door in all these communities, including Smite, is one of the communities we're looking to get involved in. So shout out to all of those guys. And as always to you, Chris, for putting on a great show each week.
My shout out is just going to round it off. Just, big thanks to the three of you guys for having, do a great episode. And obviously the two of you guys for, we're going to continue on and do some great things. Big shout out to my mods, obviously for, just every week for manning the chats and, just all you guys, viewers for watching just every week and supporting the shows. Unfiltered is going to be on in about an hour, so I got these double headers like on Thursdays now, so it's going to be crazy.
Man,
I know, I'm just crazy. Sometimes I just shake my head like, what the hell, Chris?
what was I thinking when I did all this?
Yeah,
I tanked this one. That's what you did.
So Unfair is going to be on an hour, and that's about it. Yeah, so VODs for this is they're going to be up later tonight at youtube.com/ChamMV. Follow us all on Twitter, twitter.com/ChamMV, twitter.com/ is it ES_John Clark?
ES_John Clark.
And then at Richard Lewis, right? Is Richard A. Lewis or Richard Lewis? I forget.
Richard_A_Lewis, because all the cool Richard Lewis's are Twits. So.
And then twitter.com/call_lake for Jason here. But yeah, that's going to be it for Climbing the Ladder this week. Oh, actually, I do end up. Oh, I have the credits now. I'm going to have to add the credits here. Hold on. Give me a second.
Congrats on 50 episodes, though, guys. Sincerely, that's great. Keep it up.
Definitely. We're planning something pretty special for 1 year. So 1 year's coming up in a couple weeks. Oh no, it's green! It's green! It's green!
Fancy.
Oh, it's green. Oh man.
People are asking, so I'll tell them your unfiltered show with Destiny, and that's the name of it. So people are asking, like, when's the next show with Destiny?
Oh no.
It's called Unfiltered, and it's coming up in an hour from now. Is that right?
Yeah. Oh my god, I can't change this damn thing. All right. No, okay, you guys caught the credits that way. It's like, oh man, I'm gonna have to fix it next week, but But anyways, that's going to be it for Climbing the Ladder this week. It's for Chimman V, John Clark, Richard Lewis, and Jason Lake. We'll see you next time.
All right.
Later.
Thanks. Peace.
Thanks.